Empower Radio presents The Miracle of Healing with Lisa Campion. Meet healers, learn different modalities, and hear empowering stories of people on their healing journey. The Miracle of Healing on Empower Radio. Here's your host, Lisa Campion.
Hi there, I'm Lisa Campion, and this is The Miracle of Healing on Empower Radio, where conscious people come together to explore the world of healing and heal the planet, one person at a time. You guys know how much I love Reiki. Maybe you don't know, but I'm going to tell you because that's what we're talking about tonight. And in case you don't know, Reiki, if you've never heard of it, Reiki is a gentle but powerful hands-on healing technique from Japan. And I've been teaching Reiki myself for about 18 years, and I'm actually just about to publish a book about Reiki myself. So I get so excited to talk about Reiki and have other Reiki teachers to talk to. And I'm very pleased this tonight to have Franz Dina on our show. I met Franz at a Reiki conference in Boston and was super impressed with him and his knowledge and his books, which I have to admit, I read all of them. I bought all of them at the conference and then read them all. And he's written many wonderful books about Reiki. And I think he has what's really unique about him and his work with Reiki is that he's really researched the origins of Reiki all the way back to the Reiki's founder, Yusui Sensei. And Franz's research on Yusui Sensei uncovered what's really been a surprise to many of us Western Reiki practitioners, that he has found that the hands-on healing part of Reiki is actually really only a small part of a much broader spiritual practice, which includes like a philosophy, you know, includes chanting, meditation, breathing practices, and is really kind of a deeper mystery school and spiritual practice, which I got completely excited about because that's right up my alley too. And because I was a martial artist and for a long time myself, 10 years and spent quite a few years living in Japan, I really know and appreciate Japanese mindset about these things. So really loved the work that Franz has been doing. So I'm so happy to have him on the show. So welcome, Franz. Thank you so much for being here with me today.
Thank you, Lisa, for inviting me. How exciting.
Yeah, it is so exciting. So can you tell us a little bit about how you came to know Reiki?
Well, I had a back problem since I was about 16, and it became only worse progressively over time. They put my torso into plaster, and they said, well, we can't do anything about it, just take painkillers and lots of physiotherapy. And by the age of 30, it became worse. And so I started to really look at something, what I could do for myself. And who knows why, one of the things that came on my path was the system of Reiki. And I started to explore it and became a Reiki teacher and started to teach it. We had a Reiki center for a year in India where we lived in the Himalayas in Darjeeling, and we did a lot of volunteer work. And that was kind of the beginning of my journey about 20 years ago.
Yeah, that's beautiful. So, I think lots of people come to Reiki because, you know, they've got a problem, they have pain, or, you know, they're looking. I think of Reiki sort of a gateway for so many people into a larger spiritual life, you know, kind of like yoga, right? Or meditation. It's just like you, many people have that kind of experience with it.
Yes, absolutely. I think what is great about the system of Reiki, like yoga or Tai Chi or Qigong, is that it has lots of different entrance points. So, you know, some people really like to focus, as you said, on hands-on healing. Some people like to focus within the system of Reiki on chanting a mantra. Some people like to focus on just doing gentle breathing and meditation practices just to feel, you know, a little bit more happier and more content with their life, even if they have a physical issue.
And how did you get so curious about the founder of Reiki, Yusui Sensei? It's something that a lot of people here in the United States where I practice Reiki kind of gloss over. There's a lot of myth and fable about who he was as a person and how Reiki came into being.
Well, one of the interesting things when I just started off, we lived in India for 2 years, and when we had a Reiki center in Darjeeling, there was a lot of local healers around. They all did, you know, all sorts of different forms of healing. And it were Tibetan Buddhist, Nepali, Hindu, shamanic practices. And one thing they all had in common was a very strict self-discipline of meditation and healing for themselves. And the way I was taught, that was not really included. You place your hands on yourself, you go to sleep, and that's about it. But when I looked at those people and talked to those people, or when they put their hands on me, I thought, holy moly, that's what I want to feel as well. It was just so deep and so, for another better word, powerful, and it took me such a different places. So then I started to wonder, well, why isn't that within the system of Reiki? Why haven't I been taught any of these meditation practices? So I became curious and went to Japan and started to rediscover that actually traditionally within the system of Reiki of Japan was, first of all, a practice for yourself to really lay bare your own healing potential. And when that became more and more overflowing, then you could help other people. But yeah, it was a very interesting journey.
Yeah, I think it's a a surprise. Like what I notice about modern Reiki is that it's often combined with like a lot of New Age things, chakras, crystals, angels, these kinds of things. And my feeling about it, or my theory, you can tell me if you think this is right, is that there's a feeling of that it's missing something, you know. So people wanted to add more symbols, or they wanted to add this to it. And I think that what it was missing is these deeper practices. What do you think?
I agree 100% with you, Lisa. I think this is why, you know, if we practice something and what is really complete, then we don't feel the need to add anything to it. But the way it was already changed in Japan by Hayashi Sensei, and then by Mrs. Takata, and then how it came to the West, these kind of deeper teachings were never really being taught. So people felt there was something missing. They loved it, but I hear this a lot. They say, oh, I really love Reiki, but I felt there was something missing. So they start to add different things in it to kind of make it complete. But when we go back to those roots of Mikosui's teachings, then we realize, oh, it is actually complete already by itself. We don't need to add anything at all. And I think he was a very clever man and created these really interesting spiritual teachings based on esoteric Japanese spiritual practices. And if we start to understand that, and I think this for me has been a really interesting journey to go into Japan and train with different Japanese teachers, and specifically priests who really still soak in that traditional roots of healing, and who haven't really added anything. They really focused on that purity of their tradition. And that for me has really made a huge difference. And what I see too, when I start to teach people who've done Reiki 1, 2, or 3, or Reiki teachers who come to our classes, they say, oh, wow, I knew something was missing, but this feels like I'm coming home.
Mm-hmm. And it's hard. I mean, like, you know, it's no magic bullet. It's not like one more symbol is going to bring you all this, you know, power all of a sudden. It's like really, and I liked it too, because as a martial artist, and I studied when I was living in Japan studying martial arts, my teacher was a Zen Buddhist monk and a Qigong master. And so he was very hardcore. Like, we had Zazen. If you wanted to train in the dojo, you had to show up at five to six in the morning for meditation. And you couldn't train if you didn't do that, because he really felt like that was the foundation of everything. So I've had some of that old school Japanese, you know, philosophy and spiritual practice. And he was the first person that told me that healing ability is a byproduct of spiritual growth, and not something we really should seek on our own. It's like it comes about as a byproduct of a bigger growth pattern. What do you think?
Oh, I agree 100% with you, Lisa. This is going good. It is. I often say that too. I often say hands-on healing is a byproduct of your spiritual practice,
right?
Because, you know, like I see this a lot. A lot of people go like, oh, I go into the Reiki and they mean good, and they go do they do like a hands-on healing on their family members, and they really want to help them. And what of course is a great intent, and then they start to help some friends, and then afterwards they go, wow, I can't really do this anymore. I just feel confused. I don't know what to do. It's when people come with their emotions, that is really bothering me, because their own foundation, their own spiritual growth is not as juicy yet. Do you know what I mean? And when we feel more that juice within ourselves, that juice of that spiritual growth, that inner joy, that inner happiness, the inner flow of that Reiki, and ultimately realizing that we are Reiki already. It's not somewhere external. We are it. And by then performing hands-on healing from that space, it becomes something quite different.
Right. I don't think we can go with our clients in places where we haven't been in ourselves, you know. And I had the same experience. One of my Reiki students said, I really love Reiki, but I don't want to deal with anybody that's sick or in pain. And I was like, well, you can, if you just want to find happy people to do Reiki, you know. And so I said, you might have to deal with those parts of yourself, you know, that where you can't look at your own, you know, pain in your own. And of course, my background is also from counseling and psychology. So I like to combine those things. I'm not afraid of people's deep experiences. So I welcome that when it comes in a session. But I just also think it's funny too, that from reading your book, that kind of reminded myself that Reiki is really much more around the energy meridians and acupuncture points, and not so much the chakras, right?
Yeah, in a way. I mean, ultimately, you know, of course, when we go deeper into our spiritual practice, if you believe in chakras, then that will benefit your chakras. If you believe in Hara or Dantian or meridians, then will it affect that, or whatever name we call it to. And I think, you know, traditionally, Mikasui's teachings, there were no chakras. It was, chakras is more an Indian system, and it was more focused on the Hara or the Tandon. Mm-hmm. And but specifically, you know, what I really like also about those Japanese teachers, particularly those traditional ones, my teacher in Japan, he gives me this exercise or practice to do, and he doesn't explain anything. He just explains how you do the exercise, and that's it. And then from that comes your own insights through the practice. And we kind of often in our modern world go the other way. We say, oh, this means this, and then this, and this, and this, and this, and this. And then I think sometimes we get a little bit confused by it. We get too caught up in the analytical, intellectual idea of energy work. I often say this, so for example, you know, people say in class, oh, but how does the energy needs to work? I said, well, if you drive a car, what do? You hop in a car, you start the car, and you just drive it. I said, you're not thinking about when you put the key on that there is some electric thing going to some power plug, what triggers that, what pumps this, what makes the gasoline go into your motor, what makes the wheels drive. And if you would drive like that for an hour, you'd be very, very tired after an hour, because you're constantly analyzing. Plus, probably get an accident. Mm-hmm. But if we just drive the car, if we just practice, if we just place our hands on ourselves, or we just place the hands on someone else, and we completely let go, then of course everything flows so much easier. But I think that's also difficult in our modern society, because we like to analyze always. We like to label. We like to distinguish. We like to analyze. And then we get caught up in our mind more, in our confused mind. And then that energy cannot really be free. So I really like what you said about your teacher in Japan, that he said, oh, let's first sit in meditation for an hour. Because then from that quiet emptiness space, comes really those movements of the martial arts, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, it does. And he really taught a whole system that had meditation, breathing. And, you know, I learned a lot about how to move energy in the way the martial artists do from with the Hara line, with the Dantian, you know, the power, that power point in the belly. And my theory is that that's in a way like why my Reiki's strong, because that's my foundation, you know. And I love what you just said about our expectations, like overthinking. And I find like a lot of my students get sort of caught in the trap of feeling like, well, they're a healer, so they have to know how to heal the person that's in front of them. And if they have an expectation, well, that person's got to get better. And if they don't get better, it means I'm a bad healer. And they're very, well, what does getting better look like? They have a very clear agenda on what they think that is. And I liked what you said about just letting that flow, getting the mind and the agenda and the expectations out of the way, opens up the energy to flow in whatever way it needs to.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a pitfall for many healers, I think, that we have too many expectations. And I always see it a bit like this. If you put something in your hand and you make a fist around it, you hold it very tight. And so the expectations is holding something very tight. My headache needs to be gone. This needs to be healed. That person needs to feel good after the session. They actually need to really be happy with me. And all of these things we hold so tight, but if we hold tight, that issue can never move. And also the energy doesn't flow that free. So it's better to hold it in an open hand, open your hand, open that mind, and let go of those expectations and labeling and distinguishing. I always make a joke, Lisa, and I say, well, if we really could heal people, then I'm going to stand, you know, in New York, some busy area, and one by one, I say, okay, next, healed. And then within no time, you know, New York will be the happiest place in the world. But we all know that doesn't happen that way, you know. No. And I think sometimes we get a bit confused with what is healing.
Right. Yes. And that healing, like, that means the person's going to get better. Maybe it means actually I've worked with a lot of people where you give them some Reiki energy and they use it to cross over, you know, instead
Absolutely.
Of that's what's on their ticket is, and we see that as bad really, but it's just what's unfolding, you know?
Yeah. I think also, you know, like sometimes we want that person to be the end of their suffering. But for example, when we do a treatment, it might be that the physical pain is not going away, but when the person's mind becomes more open due to the treatment, they will deal with that physical issue in a very different way. So I think this is sometimes also really important to realize that healing is not always on a physical level. It could be on a very different level. And most of the time we look at often at a very physical level. And I think this is what I like about the precepts within the system of Reiki. Do not anger, do not worry, be grateful, be true to your way and your being, and show compassion to yourself and others. And if we look at those, then we can see that they're all about a state of mind.
It's such a Japanese thing. Every dojo you go in, every school you go into Japan has a set of precepts. And
yeah,
that's not something we really, it's so common there. And it is like that, those guiding principles, that mindset that you talked about. And I think it is something that a lot of times us Westerners, especially here in the States, we gloss over that a bit, don't we?
Well, yeah. For example, you know, like I see people when they do a treatment on someone and they're chatting along and, you know, they said, oh, we can just chat. But most of the time they're just gossiping or chatting about rubbish. And then I go like, well, you know, in reality, you're not really in that state of mind of the precept. So I always make it very easy and I say, imagine if you put your hands on someone and you gossip about worry, or you gossip about something what makes you angry, or something you're not grateful about, or not being true to your way and your being, or not being compassionate, or you do a treatment as much as possible from that space of no anger, no worry, being grateful, being true to your way and your being, and being compassionate, what would be different? And they go, oh, yes, actually, that would probably make a huge difference.
Yeah, it's a beautiful guiding principle. I'd love to hear you talk a little bit more about your book. I know you've got a new one coming out. I'm so excited.
Yeah, me too. It's called Reiki Insights. And my last book, what came out last year, was called The Inner Heart of Reiki, Rediscovering Your True Self. And that's been going really well. And kind of Reiki Insights is a continuation of that. And what I really like, many years ago, at the beginning of my journey, I read this wonderful book by Sunryu Suzuki, a Zen master. And it's called Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, and he has these little chapters. And what I love to do was pick that book up and just open it at a random chapter and read it, the one little small chapter, and think about it and meditate and contemplate. So this particular book, Reiki Insights, what comes out at the end of this year, is a little bit, I wanted to do a little bit similar, that people could pick it up, just open to one chapter and read about it and then think, oh, how does that relate to my practice? How does it relate to my life? All those kind of things.
That's great. I can't wait to read it. And I'm happy that you're sharing your Reiki insights with us. I can't wait. I'm sure it's going to be a beautiful book.
Thanks. Yes. I like the cover as well.
Oh, good. And if you were going to help, you know, the people that are listening sort of, take something that they could practice or bring into their spiritual practice, what could we start with?
No, I think it's actually, I'm looking out now through a window and I see trees and I see flowers and I see lots of nature. And if, you know, for me, we are that universe, we are kind of nature, and therefore nature starts with a little root. You know, the tree starts with a little seed in the earth, and from that it grows roots, and then it grows a bit upwards, grows more root, grows more upwards. So really making sure that your roots are really strong, I think that is so important in our modern society. So doing deep breathing into your belly, the hara or tandon just below your belly button, is a very important element in traditional Japanese spiritual practices, but also martial arts. And if you would stand up, you would actually see that point just below your belly button is the center of your body. And we often feel that. We feel off center during our normal life because we're so busy, we're so in our head. And therefore, bringing that breath and your mind back to that center just below your belly button, I think, is an essential practice for anybody in their daily life to feel more centered.
That's great. I love it. And I totally know what you mean, because the martial artists train from that point. Like, that's when you study martial arts, you're really developing that as the source of your strength. So if people wanted to study with you or find out more about you, how could they do that?
They can check my website, www.ihreiki.com. They can also look on my Facebook page, Franz Steiner, or International House of Reiki Facebook page. I teach about 4 or 5 times a year in the US, in New York, Washington, D.C., Chicago, Boston, San Francisco, Los Angeles, Seattle, Cincinnati. I love it. I love coming there. And I think it's great to have these wonderful communities of sharing healings, sharing love, sharing pain, sharing discomfort, and holding each other's hands and traveling that path together.
Yeah, I was just looking at your training schedule, and I was thinking maybe I'll come to Washington in September and take your Shimpenden level, because that sounds so exciting to me. I would love to study with you some more.
Oh, it'd be great. And Reston is a lovely little town. It's got good cafes and restaurants as well.
That's great. That's good. So I just, and you, do you also healings? Do you have, if people go to your website, they can get a healing?
Yes, I do distance healing. And for example, when I travel, I often have or when I teach a Shimpenden classes or a Reiki 1 or 2 classes, then I like the day prior, I often do one-on-one sessions with people as well. I still really love doing those.
Mm-hmm. Yes, me too. I can't get enough of doing Reiki and teaching Reiki myself. So thank you so much for being my show. It's so fun to talk to another Reiki person, and I so appreciate your knowledge base, and it's so exciting. I hope everybody runs right out and reads your books. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for inviting me, Lisa, and maybe I see you in Washington, D.C.
I hope so. I think you might. And thank all of you guys for listening here today on Empower Radio. If you guys want to reach me, lisacampion.com. Thanks, guys. Bye.